Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
3, 2, 1.
When I'm working out, I love to listen to your podcast.
Whenever you say something, other people react to it.
Taking my breath away, Aaron.
To a Thursday night, Friday morning edition of the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. I am your host, Aaron Torres.
NASCAR icon, hope everybody's doing well. Earnhardt Jr.
Hope everybody is ready for what should be a fun show and a fun final week. Talking all things college hoops. We, of course, have the Final Four this weekend. The coaching carousel is on fire. There is so much to get into here on a Thursday night. We're going to open. We're going to start just frankly with the story. Just put a bow on the story from Tuesday's show. Eric Musselman does officially accept the USC job. What does it mean for USC? Why is he the right fit? But also, what is going on at Arkansas? Because it feels as though the Hogs brass is moving quick. It feels as though they know who they want as their next head coach. And it feels as though they might get him. So we'll talk Arkansas. And then we got to do this crazy thing called preview the Final Four. So it's funny, right? A lot of you have been asking me since Sunday, what are your picks? Who do you like? NC State versus Purdue, UConn versus Alabama. And I always say I like to get to the Final Four site before I actually make my picks. It's good to be around the teams, get the feel for, are they just happy to be here? Are they still on a mission? All that good stuff. So we'll start with UConn, Alabama. Can UConn be beat? And I think that conversation is crazy, but I think we'll discuss it anyway. And then from there, we will talk Purdue, NC State. Purdue, almost a double-digit favorite as well. Before we get started, before we preview the Final Four, do want to remind you a couple things. First of all, thank you to our presenting sponsor, BetUS Sportsbook and the BetUS Sportsbook app. So BetUS has been with us all March long, really since February. It's now April. The relationship has been great. I'm doing stuff for them on the ground here in Phoenix. But what I need you to do is help me out. Okay, so BetUS right now has given away the best offer going in sports gambling. How about this? They are matching 125% on your first three deposits. Okay, so let's just say hypothetically, this weekend, you hate Torres, you like Purdue, you take Purdue, and Purdue ends up losing. First of all, just when you deposit, they're going to match 125%. So you put $100 on Purdue, you deposit $100, they're going to give you $125 in your account to play with. Let's say you lose it on Purdue and you want to bet on UConn in the title game or Bama on the title game, you can redeposit and they will match you again. Your first three deposits, 125% deposit bonus. So thank you to BetUS. I appreciate them. I am here on the ground in Phoenix because of them. I am in a little bit of a bunker, though. Can't let those Purdue fans know where I am. But thank you to BetUS. Also want to thank Bracket Fanatics and BracketFanatics.com. For the fourth straight year, Bracket Fanatics is our Aaron Torres Pod Bracket Challenge sponsor. And it has been awesome. It has been going great. But here is the cool part. For the first time ever, if your bracket is busted, you can still win cash courtesy of Bracket Fanatics. Here is how. They are giving away $250 in cash to one person who is part of the Aaron Torres Pod Bracket Challenge. This is what you need to know. So in Bracket Fanatics, you have the ability to bet against friends or bet against me, okay? You can bet on Purdue, NC State, whatever. Well, I have put out a bet to all of my followers. It's 25 bracket bucks, basically free money from Bracket Fanatics, that Purdue is going to win and cover against NC State. Spoiler alert, stick around till the end of the show. But if you are part of the Aaron Torres Pod Bracket Challenge, all you have to do is accept that bet,
bet against NC State. And if you win, you get $25 in free, you know, in free bracket bucks, courtesy of Bracket Fanatics. We will then do another bet for the championship game. And whoever ends with the most money in Bracket Fanatics will win $250 in cash prizes, courtesy of Bracket Fanatics. So thank you to Bracket Fanatics. We appreciate their support. Go in, hit the Manage Bets tab, and from there, what you need to do, you need to go ahead and accept the bet, and you are automatically entered to win $125 in cash prizes. With that said, we are at the Final Four. There is no more time to waste. So let's go ahead and get to the topic of the day. The topic of the day, listen, I do want to go ahead and talk a little bit about the Final Four here in just one moment. But where I want to start, is putting a bow on a story that we discussed last week or last Tuesday on the Tuesday episode of the Aaron Torres Pod. And that, of course, is the situation with USC and Arkansas. And if you listened to the show, if you listened to Tuesday's show, you know that I basically said, like, look, I'm not rooting for or against anything. The folks of Arkansas have been great to me, but everything is trending towards Eric Musselman taking the USC head coaching job. And on Thursday afternoon, I was actually at the press conference. I got a text like everybody else in the media. It's done. And Eric Musselman officially accepted the USC job. Just want to take a minute to talk about the Mus angle of it, then the Arkansas angle of it and what's next. But first of all, from the Musselman perspective, listen, it really sucks that it ended this way for him at Arkansas. He is a great coach who elevated the Arkansas basketball program to frankly heights that they hadn't seen in 30 years before he got there. So you look at what he did. But I just think that, listen, it was well known. He's mostly from the West Coast, coached the Sacramento Kings, coached the Golden State Warriors, coached at Nevada. It was always well known he wanted to get back. Even Arkansas fans and media seemed to understand that. And when this opportunity came up, you knew this was something he was going to pursue, and he did. USC to me is a good job. I think it's a tough job, but I will say I think he is the right man for the job because it is a school in a city with a lot of sports options. The arena, bluntly, is very tough to get to. And so you need a guy with energy. You need a guy that just brings it every single night and can get a fan base riled up. And I think that's who he is, what he will do. And frankly, I think it's why he is a good fit for this job. Not an easy job. You're going to the Big Ten, but I do think he will be able to compete at the highest levels of the Big Ten because he's going to recruit well like he always does. And he's going to be able to bring in talent like he has done everywhere. Bluntly, I'll be kind of curious to see what kind of roster he puts together. Historically, just talking to coaches at USC, it has not been a place that you can get in 9, 10, 11 transfers in one offseason. Yet that's kind of been the Eric Musselman MO. And I'm fascinated to see if the school kind of loosens its guidelines, loosens its regulations. We've seen this with other coaches at other places. And I'm just curious to see how the school handles things from the Eric Musselman perspective. Now, from the Arkansas perspective, let me go ahead and say this. I said this, we did a quick reaction video. I'm never going to tell a fan base how to feel about a coach or a decision or whatever. But let me also say this about Eric Musselman, okay? I do believe in my heart of hearts, if you're an Arkansas fan, you have every right to be mad at how this ended. Obviously, a coach takes you to incredible heights, 3 Sweet 16s, 2 Elite Eights, you're one game away from a Final Four in back-to-back seasons, and you sit there and say you wish it could have ended differently, okay? But I just bring it up because when you look at what Eric Musselman did, the profile, the way that he was able to elevate this program, while it sucks how he left, while I'm not telling you you shouldn't be mad, what I will tell you is I think he made this job better for the next guy, and we're going to get into in a minute who that next guy is. But at the end of the day, listen, this was a good job, but we talked about it on Tuesday's show. Mike Anderson, it's a great job, but Mike Anderson before Eric Musselman always treated it like you people should be grateful that we're going to an NCAA tournament every 2 or 3 years. And Eric Musselman came in and said, no, the standard will be raised here. And he did that. As I said, 3 Sweet 16s, 2 Elite Eights in 5 years. And keep in mind, he only made three NCAA tournaments. He made the Sweet 16 in all three of those seasons. In the process, it's worth noting, he basically made it a recruiting hotbed. Nick Smith, Anthony Black, Jordan Walsh, Moses Moody, McDonald's All-Americans. He proved that you can win at the highest level, that you can recruit at the highest level. Jalen Williams, I didn't mention, was a top 50, top 60 kid coming out of high school. You can get McDonald's All-Americans regularly. It doesn't just have to be an Arkansas kid who grew up a Hogs fan. Anthony Black, Jordan Walsh, as I said, and you can produce pros, which I do think is worth noting as well. And so when I look at what Eric Musselman did, when I look at who he is and what he did for this program, I think we just have to go ahead and say, I understand the frustration, but I also think this program is in a much better place than it was. And I think there should be reason for excitement if you're an Arkansas fan. Which brings me to who is going to be the next head coach at Arkansas? And let me say this. I said it in the, by the way, as I'm recording here, Josh Cohen, who committed to Eric Musselman at Arkansas as a transfer, has just announced that he is in fact going to follow Eric Musselman to USC. So I guess in theory, his first commitment, Eric Musselman at USC, is Josh Cohen, a transfer who started at UMass. With that said, though, listen, we talked about the USC angle. I want to talk about the Arkansas perspective because I truly believe in my heart of hearts that Arkansas is a better place than it was. And I think they're not only going to be okay, I think they're going to get a heck of a coach. And what I will tell you, I believe that for the last two or three, at least probably, I'd say for at least the last 10 days, I think they've had an idea that Eric Musselman is trying to get out. I believe that they have been working on a contingency plan. I'll be honest, that interview that Hunter Yurecek did a few days ago, weird interview where he says he wants him to stay, but he put out the video and nobody knows what it means. Well, I bring it up because I think they were kind of already planning for life post Eric Musselman. And let me tell you this. I believe that Chris Beard, and I've been told that Chris Beard, the Ole Miss head coach, is the front runner. And I believe as of right now, we're talking 8:30 Eastern time here on a Thursday night. I think that Chris Beard is probably the favorite to get that job. And first of all, I think it's important to note is that Chris Beard is coming from Ole Miss. He just signed an extension. And so the key to this whole thing, what is the buyout? Let's assume Chris Beard wants the job. And for people who don't really follow, why would Chris Beard leave Ole Miss? Chris Beard, remember, before he went to Texas Tech, which was before Texas, which was before Ole Miss, remember, he was at Little Rock, led Little Rock to the NCAA tournament. Ironically, they beat Purdue in the NCAA tournament, which is kind of funny given today's moments and circumstances. But he beats Purdue at Little Rock, goes to the NCAA tournament and beats Purdue, and then leaves Little Rock. He goes to UNLV for like a week, then goes to Texas Tech, Texas, on and on. So he has ties to the state. I guess I haven't had a chance to see it, but I guess he did an interview where he said Arkansas is a dream job of mine. Now, I know all these guys say it, but I think he basically said like Texas and Arkansas are the two that I grew up that I wanted to be a part of as a head coach. And so the question now becomes, this is the question everybody in basketball is trying to figure out. What is the next step and can Chris Beard be gotten? The big question with Chris Beard, nobody knows what his buyout actually is. It is not public information. The way they did the contract, he's a state employee, but somehow the contract is not for you know, freedom of information. You can't get access to the contract. But what I will tell you, and producer Matt, why don't you toss up the tweet? My buddy Curtis Wilkerson, who covers Arkansas for Natty State Sports, he put this out, and it was later confirmed. Producer Matt, give me a sec here. Okay, producer Matt, thank you, buddy. Producer Matt's got a bunch ready to go. Listen, it's Thursday. Producer Matt, the weekend is coming. I know you're trying to, you got those itchy trigger fingers, but it's okay. If you're watching on YouTube, you saw about seven different tweets. That's okay because we're going to get to all of them in a minute. But Curtis Wilkerson from Natty State Sports, a good friend of mine, he put out a report that basically said, listen, I don't know if Chris Beard will take the job, but the buyout will not be a hindrance to getting the job. And that's what I have heard consistently for about the last four, five, 6 days as it has become serious. Well, I bring it up. It's not just Curtis Wilkerson. It's not just Aaron Torres who's saying stuff because just a moment ago, Jeff Goodman from Field of 68 put out this tweet. He said, Ole Miss head coach Chris Beard has emerged as one of the leading candidates for the Arkansas opening, sources told Field of 68. Well, let me tell you, Goodman has not been putting out stuff when he says leading candidate, all that. It means that it's more than just, hey, this is who we would like. Work has been done behind the scenes. You know, he was one of the first ones on Musselman, which, let's be honest, we all knew Musselman was going to be a candidate at USC. But Goodman's been all over all this stuff. He was the first on Pat Kelsey, et cetera. So I just bring it up. I do think it is happening. I do think that Chris Beard is going to be the next head coach at Arkansas. I think it could be done by the championship game on Monday. And I'll tell you this, man, I think Eric Musselman did an incredible job. This isn't to poo-poo on the guy on the way out. And I just bring it up because when I look at the situation with Arkansas, I think you didn't want to lose Eric Musselman. But if you did, this ain't the worst possible thing that could have happened. And it's also worth noting, by the way, one, I think, by the way, the NIL is going to be through the roof. Arkansas, I'm told the high school basketball in Arkansas the next 2 or 3 years, it's an insanely talented group. But let me also add one more thing. The more interesting part of the conversation is that if Chris Beard goes to Arkansas, Ole Miss is, we're hearing that Will Wade might be the top candidate there. So you talk about Eric Musselman leaving, the domino effect of Chris Beard going to a better job in the league and now adding Will Wade. That is a scary combination for the rest of the SEC, but we will see if it all happens. But I've been told Chris Beard's been the favorite. Jeff Goodman just put it out there as well. And so now we see what happens from there. All right, that's what I want to do. Take a quick break, word from our partners, and when we come back, ooh, buddy, we're going to do this crazy thing. We're going to preview the Final Four. That's next.
America's favorite sportsbook and casino. Live betting and racebook. We're celebrating 30 years with a historic offer. A 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. Plus, 10% gambler's insurance. Get started today. BetUS, where the game begins.
All right, everybody. I'm back. Good to be back. Trying to get a little comfortable here. Like I said, I am at an undisclosed location somewhere in the Phoenix area. Got to avoid those Purdue fans. By the way, had a Purdue fan sending me threats, all sorts of good stuff. Told a friend about it. She goes, I want that guy's autographed Torres because you've been a jerk and they should come after you. So Purdue fans, I'll see you out in the streets of Scottsdale, Tempe, Phoenix. And we got two games to preview. So with that said, let's not waste any more time. Let's get into the two games. And I'm actually going to start with the late one first. That, of course, is UConn and Alabama. And when I look at the UConn-Alabama game, first of all, it is worth discussing, right? It is worth at least having the conversation about the fact that UConn had some very major travel issues on their way to Phoenix on Wednesday. What was it? Wednesday night. But with that said, let's stick with the UConn-Bama preview. And let me start by saying this. So the big story on Wednesday, it was wild to kind of follow from a distance. I was just getting into town, and it was kind of a crazy thing where I'm trying to figure out what's going on, what's the truth, what's not, what's this. But UConn, basically, it felt like every single thing that could go wrong with their travel on Wednesday night did. Like, there was a problem with the pilots and FAA regulations, and they've been on too long. Don't have the right planes. They got bad weather, whatever. But UConn did make it safely to Phoenix. And first of all, Dan Hurley took the podium. I thought, by the way, everyone crushes the NCAA for everything. I actually thought they did right by UConn by not making UConn players do media availability, because UConn was supposed to leave Bradley International Airport at 6 p.m. Eastern time. They didn't take off till 1:30 Eastern time, 1:30 a.m. Didn't land until 3:37 Pacific time. And so I know what everyone will say, oh, it's just a travel delay, deal with it. It's like, no, there's two media availabilities on Thursday and Friday. It's not the worst thing in the world that UConn's players did not have to do media. So I give UConn, I give the NCAA credit for that. But I do want to talk about what Dan Hurley said when he took the podium, because I thought what he said was actually very interesting. Let's go ahead and get to Dan Hurley's comments. Producer Matt, pull up the first one, which was really funny. Here's what Dan Hurley said about the travel issues for the UConn Huskies. He said, it's not the right one. Give me a second here. Let's see if we can get this right here. All right. So he said, asked about the travel situation. He said, I ruminated a lot. Then I spiraled and I had my head in my hands a lot. It was therapeutic to watch the de-icing. So he was clearly not happy. But I will also say, I thought that the second thing that he said, which you can see on the screen now, I thought was really cool. He said, look, once you're done complaining and cursing and muttering, which sounds like something I would do, you don't really deserve to show entitlement. We're lucky to be here. We're lucky to have an opportunity to play in the Final Four. I think that's perfect, right? Is that, listen, life throws you curveballs. It's okay in the moment to be upset about it. No one is going to blame you. But at a certain point, these are caviar problems. You are at the Final Four. Get over it. Everything will be okay. So I thought that was a cool moment from Dan Hurley. But that said, let's talk a little bit about the game. Because, you know, I'll say this, is that it's always interesting to me. It isn't often that I see a media narrative that I just flatly kind of disagree with. But I will say this. I've been on a million radio shows this week and other people's shows and whatever. And I've had a lot of people ask me, Torres, is there any way anyone can beat UConn in this tournament? And I find that question so asinine. And to answer the question, yes, UConn absolutely can be beaten. Now, do I think it's definitively going to happen? No. But can it? Absolutely. And I don't care. I get it. I've watched all the games. 30-0 run against Illinois, 25-point win against Illinois, 30-point win over San Diego State. So I get all that, but when I look at the question, can UConn be beaten? Oh, absolutely. And I would argue that the two potential matchups they could have are sort of a worst-case scenario for them. First of all, starting with Alabama. Listen, I know Alabama's been hot and cold this season, but Alabama against Clemson in the Sweet Six, in the Elite Eight, Alabama made 16 three-pointers in that game, okay? Alabama made 16 three-pointers. And if you can make 16 three-pointers in any game, guess what? You can win any game. And oh, by the way, the last time UConn lost, remember, UConn has only taken one loss the entire calendar year of 2024. It was to Creighton. It was about 6 weeks ago. And guess what happened? What happened was Creighton hit 15 threes. UConn couldn't get a stop, and all of a sudden they look up and they're down 20 and the game's kind of over. And so this idea that UConn cannot be beaten, I just don't buy it one bit, man. I just don't buy it one bit. And I'll take it even a step further. It's not just that Alabama is capable. I think that this is, frankly, the only way to beat UConn. And we've talked a lot about this. If you look at UConn has basically, since the postseason started, played essentially one competitive game. It was against St. John's in the Big East tournament. Competitive for a full 40 minutes, okay? And St. John's, Rick Pitino was just blunt about it. Rick Pitino basically said, like, look, bottom line is that I told my players, I said, I know you can't defend, so don't even waste your energy on defense. Put all of your energy into offense and let's try to be 1 point better than UConn. Now, St. John's wasn't, but it doesn't change the fact that to me, that's the blueprint to beating UConn. Like all these other teams, San Diego State in the Sweet 16, Marquette in the Big East tournament, and I know Marquette was banged up, so this isn't a criticism of Marquette, but all these other teams, they want to get in the mud and wrestle and get dirty with UConn. UConn loves being in the mud. Nobody loves the mud more than UConn. And so to me, the game plan has to be go up and down, up and down, up and down, score, 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 keep putting pressure on them, keep making them make baskets. Because if you're going to try to play in the half court, if you're going to try to keep it a possession-by-possession game, then eventually UConn's going to blow you out. The question, of course, can Alabama do that? Because the difference between Alabama and Creighton, they really just don't have a ton inside. Like Creighton has Kalkbrenner, elite defender, stretch guy, whatever. Grant Nelson is kind of that, but Grant Nelson is about 4 inches shorter than Donovan Klingon. And so I'm just not sure Alabama can do that. And then I think, listen, UConn knows that to beat Alabama, they have to run Alabama off the three-point line and shove everything into the paint. Hassan Diarra talked about it on this show. And so when I look at this game, yes, I do think UConn is going to win. I will tell you, I'll give it a final score of 87-75. So that's right around UConn covering. But do I think Bama can win? Absolutely. Do I think they will? I don't. But do I think they have the blueprint? I do. And I'll also give Bama credit for this. And we talked about this a little bit last week. They are not happy to be here. And that was one thing being around all four teams. And we're going to get to Purdue, NC State in a minute. I've been covering this stuff for so long. And sometimes you can tell. They say the road to the Final Four. And there's been times where teams are just happy to be here. I remember years ago, I was covering the West Regional Final. I think it was, it was Oklahoma, and I think it was Oregon. Oklahoma beats Oregon. That was the year they had Buddy Hield. And you talked to all those Oklahoma guys, and what did they say? They said, we've been talking about going to the Final Four since the season started. And then they got to the Final Four, and they got run out by Villanova because they were just happy to be there. I didn't get that sense from Bam, and it goes back to what I said last week. Nate Oates, when he took the podium at the West Regional, he said, look, we've been to this second weekend, and we're grateful to be here. But his exact quote was, we need to get to a Final Four. So when your head coach says we need to get to a Final Four, that speaks to me. That is a guy that is not afraid of expectations, that is not afraid of challenges, whatever. And I do think there is a scenario where UConn, where this game is competitive. Again, my official pick, UConn 87, Alabama 75. I would rather take the over. I would rather take maybe I'd rather take maybe Alabama in the first half, because remember, UConn has struggled out of the gate in their last two games. I think it can absolutely be competitive. I'm not saying it will be, but I think it can be. Give me UConn 87, Alabama 75. But do I think Alabama can win? I do. And I'll tell you what, if UConn plays Purdue, I absolutely think that's going to be a heck of a game as well. All right, let's keep it going. And let's talk about the second game with America's team, the Purdue Boilermakers. Everybody knows Torres loves the Boilermakers. By the way, had more media people at, by the way, somebody at, I shouldn't even give people the time of day, but that dude, Kevin Sweeney, is so soft. He asked Purdue, or I think somebody, I don't know if it was him or not, asked Matt Painter about you know, my narrative that Zach Edey gets a soft whistle. And then he tags me on it. And so I was just like, dude, you've been saying the same thing. I did ask him, you know, I find it weird that a guy whose job he's at Sports Illustrated, like dying company, find it strange that, you know, he's coming after me. I think he's got other priorities. But like I said, we'll be happy to take him on at AT Media. We'll give him a nice internship. We'll let him run one of our Torres on accounts and call it a day. Point is, this Purdue narrative ain't going anywhere. And I do want to go ahead and get into the Purdue NC State game. And I'll say this. Listen, we've talked a lot about Purdue. And I know Purdue fans think I hate them and I don't like, no. I think your team is incredible. I have my opinions on them, but I think your team is incredible. I said after the Tennessee game that you guys deserve to be there. And so rather than focusing on Purdue, where I want to start is actually NC State, because I don't know that I have given NC State enough credit through this run. And a little bit like what Nate Oates said is that, well, Nate Oates said it about Alabama, but Kevin Keats said it about NC State. He said, we're not just happy to be here. And sometimes, you know, guys say that and they don't mean it. I truly believe in NC State's heart of hearts, they are happy to be here, but I think they are coming here expecting to win. And bluntly, they shouldn't be it's not inconceivable that they can win. By the way, a 9.5 point underdog, Purdue a 9.5 point favorite in the BetUS Sportsbook. But I bring it up because if you're an NC State player, there's no reason to think that you can't come in and compete. First off, I'll say this. Keats brought this up. I thought it was a great point. He said, look, I know what our record was going into the ACC tournament. I know where we finished in the standings. I know we played on Tuesday at the ACC tournament. He said, but if you look at our season, at one point we were 5-1 in the ACC. So we were playing great basketball. He goes, then we started losing games, but we really started kind of beating ourselves. We really kind of started beating ourselves. And I told the guys, I said, guys, we're not a bad team. We're not that far off. We got to stop beating ourselves. And so that's the first part of the NC State thing is, one, maybe they were never as bad as we thought. Thought it was interesting. Kevin Keats said in all 9 of their games, remember, 5 wins in the ACC tournament. And then beyond that, 5 wins in the ACC tournament and then 4 wins in the NCAA tournament. He said there was never a game in the second half where I felt like we were the inferior team and we weren't going to win. Thought it was interesting. He said, like, go back and look. He goes, we've dominated the second half against basically everybody. And I was thinking about it, is that sometimes, you know, you can go on a run. And I know I said that they caught some breaks on Sunday's show, and they did. You know, listen, Kentucky gets knocked down in round 1. You got to play Oakland instead of Kentucky to go to the Sweet 16. Jamal Shedd gets hurt for Houston, up 6. If Jamal Shedd's healthy, Houston probably beats Duke, and that Elite 8 game is that much tougher. At the same time, though, think about the teams that NC State has beaten, okay? During this stretch, the 9-game winning streak dating back to the start of the ACC tournament, they've beaten Duke twice. They beat Carolina. They beat Virginia. They obviously beat Marquette in the NCAA tournament, Texas Tech. And so you look at who they have played and who they have beaten. They've beaten some really good teams along this stretch. And of the 9 wins, 7 of them were against teams in the NCAA tournament. And I know 4 of them were in the NCAA tournament, but it doesn't change the fact that they're beating good teams. And so do I think this team can be competitive? Absolutely. But I'll also give Purdue credit. And I know Purdue fans think that I don't give them credit for anything. But being around that team, they were impressive because, again, you know, you ask all of them about the challenges and you know, everything that they went through last year. And they'll tell you, like, it sucked, but it made us who we are. Like I was talking to Mason Gillis, one of their starters, and he said point blank, he was like, dude, he's like, if Fletcher Lawyer or somebody's having a bad game, I'll go over to him and say, we can't Fairleigh Dickinson this thing. Get your head out of your butt. Like, we got to come out. We got to be better. And he's like, and if I say that to Fletcher Lawyer, he's got no answer for that. And so I was curious, was this the end game to get to a Final Four? Or are you trying to win it? I think Purdue, we are going to get their best effort on Saturday night. They are the first game. And I'll just be blunt. I don't know that NC State, I think as great as this story has been, I just don't know. I just don't know if NC State has enough dudes. I mean, DJ Burns is a great story. It was funny. Kevin Keats was asked about DJ Burns playing in the NFL. He goes, dude, he's a teddy bear. He goes, there's no way that guy's going to the NFL. He's a basketball player. DJ Burns said that as well. But I just bring it up because when I look at this game, listen, I know I've been critical of certain elements on Zach Edey, but I think Purdue's the better team. And I think what's important is they're getting contributions from everybody. You know, you go back to that Elite Eight game, you go back to that Elite Eight game win over Tennessee, and like, yeah, Zach Edey went for whatever, 40 and whatever it was. You know, but you go back to that game against Tennessee and think about down the stretch. A lot of big shots from a lot of guys not named Zach Edey. That was a game where I guess he had where Fletcher Lawyer, I just mentioned, had 14 points, where Braden Smith hit some big shots late. And so I believe this is a better team than maybe a lot of people have given them credit for. Again, I'm just speaking on what everybody thinks about me. But I do think this is a good team. I do give them credit. And I do expect Purdue to win. I know I had UConn covering, and listen, I'll tell you this, my best bet in the Bracket Fanatics Challenge is Purdue -9.5. So I'll say Purdue 80-67 is the final score, and Purdue wins that one. Chat is a little bit quiet tonight, but producer Matt, why don't you pop up any questions that we may have here quickly before we get out of here? Probably a little bit of a quicker show today. Ethan asks, is there any serious candidate for the Ole Miss job besides Will Wade? You know, I think there will be. And you know, the thing I'll say is this. I truly believe in my heart of hearts that, first of all, Keith Carter, the AD, is a smart guy. I don't know how you don't make that buyout so prohibitive that, like, I don't know how you don't make the buyout so prohibitive that Chris Beard cannot be gotten out of the contract after 1 year. I see little Chewy just chimed in and said, will Chris Beard really leave Ole Miss after 1 year? I think it's going to happen. But I think part of that's on the AD. How is the buyout so low? Nobody else was hiring Chris Beard last year. You give him a 4-5-6 year contract, but make the buyout $20 million in the first 2 years. So you at least get 2 years out of Chris Beard. But at the same time, I do think Will Wade is the favorite there. Listen, they're going to call other people. I wouldn't be surprised if Bucky McMillan from Samford gets a call. I wouldn't be surprised if they went another direction. But the thing about Will Wade, you also have to remember, is that, remember, Ole Miss, they were not afraid to hire Chris Beard when nobody else would. So if nobody else is going to hire Will Wade, they don't care. They just want to win. And so I do think Will Wade is the favorite. By the way, I don't know if he wants it. That's what I think is interesting. What's interesting is, and I don't know if Ethan is an Ole Miss fan, and if you are, I apologize. I do think there's probably going to be a better opportunity for Will Wade if he waits for a year. Because here's the thing about Will Wade. Crushing it in recruiting. McNeese is the best job in their conference, the Southland. And they're hosting the conference tournament next year. So it would take something shocking for McNeese State not to be back in the NCAA tournament. You go to back-to-back NCAA tournaments at McNeese State. I start to think you can probably get something better than Ole Miss when Will Wade was on this show, he was honest. He's like, look, at some point I want to get back to that level, but I'm also not in a rush. I'm also not sprinting up the ladder like I was in the past. And I'm just not 100% sold that Will Wade would actually be as interested in that job as I think a lot of people probably perceive that he would be. Now I'm going to be out in the town in Phoenix tonight. We'll see if I can get some answers to that. But to answer your question, I do think Will Wade should be perceived as the favorite, and I don't know of any other name. Will Wade to UCLA. Well, Will Wade ain't going to UCLA, but everybody else is. We didn't do a portal update today, but since our last portal update, which was insane, a lot of you really, really, really appreciated it, is that UCLA has gotten two pretty good portal commitments. They got a commitment from Sky Clark, the guard who, of course, began his career at Illinois, went to Louisville last year, also was one-time commit of Kentucky. And then also got a commitment today from Kobe Johnson from USC. That is a very talented player right there. Jalen Johnson, who plays in the NBA for the Atlanta Hawks. That's his younger brother. Two-way elite defensive wing. Mick Cronin is going to have a field day with that kid. Because I'll tell you, man, like you look at Mick Cronin and you look at UCLA, I think the thing that they really lacked this past year, they lacked a lot of things. But defensive intensity, in my opinion, was one of them. By the way, I don't know how they're doing it. But I mentioned earlier with USC how sometimes it's harder to get kids into school, especially transfers. UCLA has historically been very hard to get kids into school as transfers. And so I don't know, and I'm not accusing them of anything, you know, in a negative way. I just don't know how they've done it. Because to take two transfers in two days, they're clearly not slowing down. I give UCLA a ton of credit. Cody Smith. UConn, I believe, is already a blue blood. If they repeat, does it end everyone's debate? Cody, I'll just give you the answer that I give to everybody when I am asked this question. Bluntly, I don't really two reasons I don't like as a UConn alum, I don't care about the blue blood debate for two reasons. The first one and most important, nobody can definitively tell me what a blue blood is, okay? And so everyone has a different definition of what a blue blood is. I've always said a blue blood is like being royalty in England. It's not a club that you can just enter. You can't pay your way into the VIP of being a blue blood. And so I've always said there's six blue bloods in college basketball: Indiana, UCLA, Kentucky, North Carolina, Duke, and Kansas. And a lot of people push back. A lot of people say Indiana stinks. But I just sit there and say, that's always been my understanding. I always use the example. Elton John might be the most famous person in England. He can never be king of England. Like, this is not how it works. And so to me, I've never believed Villanova's a blue blood, Arizona's a blue blood, Louisville's a blue blood, UConn is a blue blood. And to me, it doesn't really change. But the more important conversation is, regardless of whether UConn wins this weekend or not, whether they take home their sixth national title in school history, what does not change is that there's probably not a single program in college basketball that trades the last 25 years with UConn. Five titles since 1999 under three different head coaches. And so Indiana can keep the blue blood stuff. UCLA can keep the blue blood stuff. UConn's won five national championships since UCLA last won a national championship. UConn's won five national championships since Indiana's last won a national championship. They've won four since Indiana's even made a Final Four. So I don't really care about the blue blood stuff. I don't know if they enter. If there's an argument that they weren't, I would think that that was settled last year when they won a fifth title under a third head coach. But I think, you know, if you believe that it's a club you can get into, then I think there's no doubt they're at the front of the list after this season. Any other questions before we get out of here? All right. I think that's it for tonight's Aaron Torres pod. A little bit of a quick lighter show, and it's okay. It's a Thursday night. I'm in Phoenix. I want to get out. I want to go do some things. I got a few people hitting me up to do some stuff. So it is time for me to get out of here. If you're not subscribed to the Aaron Torres pod, please make sure to do so. Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Music, wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure to subscribe to the Aaron Torres pod. Also, make sure to rate and review the show. Go ahead, give us a quick 5 stars. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, all that good stuff. Make sure you're following on social media. At @Aaron_Torres on Twitter, at Aaron Torres Pod on Instagram, Aaron Torres Podcast Questions at gmail.com, Aaron Torres Podcast Questions at gmail.com. That is all for tonight's show. I appreciate everybody's support. I'll be back Sunday. You know what? The plan is to be back Saturday night after the games. We're going to test all my equipment at the stadium tomorrow. I have no idea if we're going to be able to pull it off. Unfortunately, I couldn't bring producer Matt with me like we did in Vegas a few weeks ago. So we're going to try to do a post-game show on Saturday from the stadium. We'll see if it happens or not. Shout out to Torrin Craig. Shout out to Rachel, who hates my voice. Shout out to JJ Redick, you F-head, unblock me, bro. Shout out, Purdue fans. I'll see you in the streets. That's all for tonight's show. I will be back later this weekend.
Hi, this is Will Friedle. In a world that sometimes feels uncertain, where communities can be disconnected, there are beacons of hope in your neighborhood. Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network. They believe that the people living all around you are your best bet at creating meaningful social bonds and preparing you for the next big weather event. Whether it's lending a helping hand to a neighbor in need or standing together in times of natural disaster, Neighbor to Neighbor empowers you to grow your community. Visit caneighbors.com to learn how you can help build a more connected community. Neighbor to Neighbor. It takes a neighborhood. Hi, this is Will Friedle. In a world that sometimes feels uncertain, where communities can be disconnected, there are beacons of hope in your neighborhood. Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network. They believe that the people living all around you are your best bet at creating meaningful social bonds and preparing you for the next big weather event. Whether it's lending a helping hand to a neighbor in need or standing together in times of natural disaster, Neighbor to Neighbor empowers you to grow your community. Visit caneighbors.com to learn how you can help build a more connected community. Neighbor to Neighbor. It takes a neighborhood.